How's everyone doing today? Good. Like Courtney said, we are starting a new series today called Shalom, but y'all, I'm just happy to be here today. I don't know about y'all, but the past few weeks, the holidays and stuff, it's been a little bit crazy around our house, and there's been so much cheese, so much cheese. Cheese everything. But I don't know about y'all, but I'm kind of ready to get back into a normal kind of routine. So I'm really happy to be here today. Plus, I missed all of you guys. I missed your faces. Even though it's only been about a week and a half since I've seen most of you, it feels like it's been forever. So I'm excited, looking forward to this next year about all the things that we're going to learn together, how we're going to grow together in relationships. So let's get started with that. So our new series today that we're starting is called Shalom. You know, at the beginning of last year, I believe it was in January, me and Matt and a small group of people, we started kind of exploring this topic. And it kind of changed the way that I look at the world around me. So I felt like it was a great way to start the year last year for me personally. So I thought it would be a great way to start the year together with you guys. So we together, the group that we were in, we broke the concept into four parts: wholeness, humility, forgiveness, and justice. So those are kind of the topics that we're going to be going through the next few weeks. So before we get started on talking about how to have shalom and stuff, we got to talk about what it is. So can anyone tell me what shalom is? Nobody? Peace. Thank you. We usually associate the word shalom with peace. Now, peace is defined as freedom from disturbance or the absence of war. But shalom is not just the absence of something negative. It's the presence or even the action of something positive. So let's think of it this way. We all have a food that we can't stand, right? Like there's at least one food that even the sight of it, the smell of it, you just kind of cringe just a little bit. For me, I like pretty much every food. So I had to kind of dig back in my memories to pull this one up. As a kid, I always hated tuna casserole night. Does anybody like tuna casserole? And my dad. I hate tuna casserole. It's like got all the things in it that I don't like. It's really bready. It comes with gravy. I don't really like gravy. It has onions in it. I don't like raw onions. It had all the things in it that I just didn't like. I would have loved for that tuna casserole to just disappear from the table. But you know, if nothing else were to take its place, then eventually I would be so hungry and miserable that the absence of what I did not like would not matter to me anymore. It's not enough that it's gone. It has to be replaced by something that is more appealing to me. Something that could take care of that hunger. Something like fried chicken. Am I right? Fried chicken was my favorite night as a kid. In the same way, shalom is more than the absence of something negative. It's the presence of something that brings fullness. So the word shalom is Hebrew. It's a Hebrew word. We see it throughout, well, if we read in Hebrew, which I don't, you would see it all throughout the Old Testament. It represents peace, harmony, wholeness, completeness, prosperity, welfare, and tranquility. It's complex. So you have this complex idea, and where all these little pieces work together, all these things come together, and it creates a state of completeness. I like to visualize it like a brick wall. So a brick wall is a bunch of little bricks that all come together to create one thing. And if a brick wall is a solid structure, if it's going to be a solid structure, then it can't have missing bricks. It can't have gaps in the wall. It can't have cracks to be whole. If one piece falls out or cracks, the integrity of the entire wall is at risk. But shalom is not a physical thing. It's a way of being. We see this in the Old Testament, like when David, as a kid, he visited his brothers on the battlefield. And he asked them about their shalom. He asked them about their well-being. You know, in the Jewish culture, even today, shalom is a way of greeting people or telling them goodbye. It's a way of asking about their well-being, and it's a way of wishing them well as they leave. And like a wall, our lives have many parts that come together to form who we are. So kind of like, I've got a picture here. Maybe. Image one. So we have a picture here of a brick wall, like a solid wall that is... We're all waiting on you, Matt. It's okay. Okay, so close your eyes and picture a brick wall. So we have a brick wall that is solid. It doesn't have any cracks. Huh? There we go. It's a solid wall. And you can see some of the individual pieces and stuff, but it comes together to form something solid. And that's kind of how we are. When all of the pieces in our lives kind of come together and they exist in harmony, then we are in kind of a state of fulfillment, of completeness, of wholeness, of shalom. So our next picture is kind of what it is to be in a complete state. I'm going to just talk. But when something is missing, when something breaks apart, when something in our life doesn't quite go as planned, it feels out of place, then it can break part of us away. And when we miss that, when it starts to fall away, when the bricks crumble, it challenges who we are. It causes us to consider that maybe we don't have it all together. It puts us at risk of our entire life falling apart. So we have to learn to fill the gaps, and we have to mend the cracks to work toward restoring wholeness. So I'm going to give you guys a little inside information on myself today. Lego sets are one of my love languages. I love Legos. Yeah. He knows. The more complex the set is, the better. But see, I don't like just playing with Legos. I like the instructions. I know. I love following step-by-step instructions, one piece at a time, putting something together. You have all these little pieces that they're all together in a bag. You dump them out, and it's just like this big mess, and then you sort them out. And then you start one at a time. And as you put it together, it becomes something new. It becomes something whole. It feeds my OCD personality, my nerdy interests, and my creative side all together at once. Like, Legos are awesome. And I pass this on to my boys. So this past week, my boys got some Lego sets for Christmas. So I've spent countless hours sitting in the floor. My back is killing me, but it was worth it because we spent countless hours sitting together on the floor, putting things together. Well, as much as Liam would let me. He's a little bit of a Lego hog. But when the set is complete, it's a beautiful thing. When all the pieces are in place, nothing's missing, it functions as it should. You know, they have some really cool sets that have, like, these little torpedo things that you can, like, push, and it, like, shoots things, and they move. But everything has to be in its right place for it to function properly. So once everything's together, You're like, I built this. Like, I built this, and it's cool. And it looks like little baby Yoda, and it's just awesome. And then the hard part for me comes. I let the boys play with it. But we'll talk about that in a few weeks. We'll finish that story later. So now that we've kind of covered what shalom is, it's wholeness, it's fullness, it's completeness, let's talk about how we gain shalom. How do we live with a feeling of wholeness or completeness? You know, I wish I could say that it's kind of a one-and-done fix, that you just decide, like, I'm going to live a life of shalom. I'm going to be totally chill all the time, and I'm always going to feel put together. I'm never going to feel like something's wrong. Nothing bad is going to happen that's going to cause a crack or knock out a brick. But it's not like that. It's not that simple. A life of shalom is a constant process, and it requires finding balance in your life. And often, usually, adopting a new mindset, a new way of seeing things. We are unable to achieve shalom on our own. You know, on our own, as people, what do? We operate with our best interest in mind, our best interest. We think about us. We think about what we want. We think about what makes us happy. We gravitate toward things that bring us success and pleasure. But we rarely consider how our actions affect the happiness of others. We kind of place our desire for personal shalom above the shalom of others and the whole, don't we? And that's just kind of human instinct. It started in the garden. But you know, living that way, it places everyone in opposition with everyone else. It creates holes. It creates cracks. It's not exactly the picture of peace on earth and goodwill toward men that we've been singing about and celebrating the past few weeks. So how do we get to that? If we can't bring shalom on our own, who can? In the Old Testament, the prophet Isaiah tells us of someone coming that would bring shalom to the world. In Isaiah 9, 6 through 7, it says, "For a child is born to us, a son is given. The government will rest on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. His government and its peace will never end. He will rule with fairness and justice from the throne of his ancestor David for all eternity. The passionate commitment of the Lord of Heaven's armies will make this happen." The Lord will make it happen. He will make it happen by sending a Prince of Peace who will establish a kingdom, a government, that isn't an earthly government. It's not like what we think when we hear the word government. It's the invisible kingdom, and that invisible kingdom will last forever. And what will it be? Peace. It's a kingdom of peace, ruled by the Prince of Peace. And it's accessible to us all. If you were with us through the last series that we just finished up a few weeks ago, we just finished talking about the covenants. And the new covenant that we ended with, some people actually call the covenant of shalom, the covenant of peace. It's the covenant that Jesus established. The Prince of Peace came and established this covenant. He brought peace on earth and goodwill to men. His birth in the Old Testament and the New Testament was announced as the arrival of peace. And then the book of John, Jesus tells his disciples about the coming of the Holy Spirit. And he says in John 14:27, "Peace I leave with you. my peace I give you. I do not give you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled and do not be afraid. So the peace was not meant to be on earth just when the Prince of Peace was here. He left us, he gave us his peace in the form of the Holy Spirit. Are you guys tracking? Okay. We just went on like a very quick little run through of the Bible with a theme, peace. The peace that Jesus brought to earth and gave us through the Holy Spirit is unlike anything that this world can produce on its own. See, what we think will make us happy rarely does. In times of war, everybody prays for and longs for peace. But in times of peace, what do? We're always looking for a fight, right? We can't settle. We can't find peace because we're looking for peace outside of the kingdom. We tend to look at peace as being dependent on our outward situations, but that kind of peace, the kind of peace that Jesus brought to us, is an inward peace that exists regardless of our circumstances. Let's think about that for just a minute. How much emphasis as a society do we place on material possessions, personal success, or even relationships? A lot. Our attempt at trying to manufacture happiness, we're always looking for something better because the grass is always greener, the next boyfriend is the one that's going to bring you joy, the new job's going to make you happier, it's going to fulfill you. How many times have you heard someone say, if I could just get out of this town, if I could just get away from where I am, then I'll be happier? No, you won't. Because you're going to take all of the messed up stuff with you. Because it's not the town. It's not the year. It's not the place. It's the person. Peace, shalom, has to start with the individual. Why do we constantly look for the next best thing instead of just working on being content with who we are, who God created us to be? And then no matter what's going on around you, won't challenge that. It won't crack the wall. You know, it's kind of like a kid after Christmas, like the day after Christmas, watching an ad on TV about a new toy. And that's the toy that they want. They need that toy. When the toy that 2 days earlier was going to change their lives, was going to make everything great that they would play with forever and ever and ever and love, is sitting in a pile in a floor, like in the corner somewhere, totally forgotten about. We're all like kids the day after Christmas. We're all looking for something to make us happy when the thing that we thought was going to make us happy, we already have. We become prisoners to our possessions and our circumstances. Now, on the flip side, when we surrender all of that to God and trust Him for our provision and our relationships, it's then that we can begin to enjoy life. The theological philosopher Nicholas Walterstorff, they all have to be like German. He said, the goal of human existence is that man should dwell at peace in all his relationships with God, with himself, with his fellows, with nature, a peace that is not merely the absence of hostility, though certainly it is that, but a peace which at its highest is enjoyment. So I'm going to let you guys in on a little secret today, something I discovered a few years back, And I'm sure that many of you already know this. Many of you probably knew this before it clicked with me. But it's something worth being reminded of regularly. The ability to find joy in life has everything to do with your inward condition and nothing to do with your outward situation. It's a secret to life, guys. One of them. You know, this truth, it hit me in the face on a trip to Guatemala. See, the people that we met there, they were not concerned with having a Pinterest-perfect house. They were just thankful to have shelter. The level of poverty that I witnessed there was extreme. It's like nothing I had seen before. And I went there fully prepared to feel pity for the people that I met, to feel like I was coming in at a position of understanding, of a higher position than them for some reason, that because I have a house and a job and all these things, that I was better than them in some way, that I had more than them. But what absolutely stopped me in my tracks was when I realized that I was jealous of them. Because, see, even though they had very little material or earthly possessions, there were people there that had something that I had never fully experienced before. They had joy. They had faith like I'd never seen. And they had peace. How? How can they have nothing? How can they live in a shack? How can they dig through garbage in order to try to find their daily food? And they're still more at peace in the world than I am? How? Now, don't mishear me. We don't have to live in extreme poverty to experience shalom. Financial security, having things, it's not a bad thing. It can be a good thing. But the problem is when we begin to trust our own provision instead of trusting God for it. Teddy Roosevelt said, "Comparison is the thief of joy." When we learn to break free from that comparison trap and stop looking for outward security and begin to trust God with our lives, we begin moving in the direction of finding shalom. It's not that we have to sell all our possessions. You know, the story of the rich young ruler that came to Jesus, and he said, "I've followed the commandments my entire life. What do I have to do? Like, what more do I have to do?" And Jesus said, "Sell all your possessions." And he couldn't do it. And I've always thought, well, is that saying that God is like telling us to, like, in order to have a close relationship with God, in order to be at peace, we can't have stuff? No. That particular person placed more value in his valuables than he did in his relationship with God. That's what he was being asked to let go of. We have to figure out on our own what it is that we're placing above God. But you might ask, that's all kind of superficial kind of stuff, right? Like, you can decide that I'm going to live free of my possessions, that all these things, you can make your mind up for that. But what if something happens in my life that is so devastating that I cannot imagine being at peace with it? Can you still live with shalom when one of your bricks gets knocked out, when there's a crack in the foundation? But see, that's when shalom is needed the most. So in the past couple months, I know two people that very unexpectedly lost their spouses. And I've watched from a distance as these two people that I've known both of them for years and years, known their spouses too. But seeing how they have reacted differently in a somewhat similar situation. So the first is a man that I used to attend church with. But even though he attended church, he never really trusted God with his life. He never fully, like, just went in and just said, God, I trust you. Like, I'm turning my life around. He was still hanging on to those things in his life that he thought would bring him pleasure or joy or security. And, you know, when his wife died, his world fell apart. He made a post on Facebook that broke my heart. He said, the day that she took her last breath, I cursed God. He feels that God is cruel and punishing because his wife died. He feels personally victimized, like God did something to him. And I have witnessed him spiral into a deep depression of lonely misery. He is a broken man without any peace. The second person is a girl that I knew from college. I knew her and her husband both. She lost her husband in a tragic accident a few months ago. Now she's a young widow with three young kids to raise on her own. But see, there's a difference because she lives her life fully surrendered to God. As long as I've known her, she has been an advocate of joy. And I have witnessed her walk in that steady faith every day since his accident. And her faith has inspired so many people. There are people that have come to know God because of her witness, because of her faith. She carries the perspective that our stories are for God's glory. She shares the pain of what she's going through, but she always turns it back around to, I trust God. She trusts that he's good and faithful despite the pain that she's living in. Now, this is not to say that there's not heartbreak, because what she is going through, I can't even imagine. But when you live in shalom, even extreme pain cannot destroy your peace. There's a Japanese method, pottery method. Oh, switching gears. And it's called kintsugi or something like that. I don't know, it's Japanese. But I've always loved it. Do we have a picture of it? Is it? Oh, look at that. Isn't that beautiful? It takes something that's broken and it makes it more beautiful than it was before. So what happens is when a piece of pottery gets broken, it has these cracks and it's different pieces, but each one of those cracks, it bears testimony to its story. It could easily be thrown away. When something gets broken, when something's damaged, our natural tendency is to throw it away. Start over. Get something new. But kintsugi gives it another chance. It takes the broken pieces, glues it back together, melds it together with gold. The more cracks it has, the more gold is used. You see what I'm saying here? It becomes more beautiful, but it also becomes more valuable than it was before. Y'all, we're all a little broken. Some of us are really broken. Life tends to just kind of chip away at us. And if we don't allow God to take us through the mending process, eventually we're just going to be a pile of broken pieces. But if we surrender to being repaired, we can become more beautiful and more valuable than ever before. So what it's called when this pottery is mended together, the process is called aggrandizing. It's the adding of value, the adding of grandeur. When we surrender to God, we are allowing him to aggrandize us. Each mended crack tells the story of who you have been and who God is rebuilding you to be. If you surrender to him and trust him with your life, he can restore you to wholeness. And he can give you the opportunity to live in shalom, regardless of your circumstances. I said earlier that shalom starts with the individual. We have to become whole ourselves before we can become part of the bigger story. Broken bricks aren't used to build the wall. The first step is accepting God's invitation for salvation. You know what salvation is? It's a mending process. It's reconciliation. It's a repairing of the relationship. But it requires surrendering to God and trusting that he will be your provision, your protection, and your purpose. Faith leads to trust. Trust leads to surrender. Surrender leads to peace. So the band's going to come back up. We're going to do another song. During this song, I want you guys to spend a little bit of time reflecting and think about what it is, what is that thing in your life that you have been holding on to? What has caused a gap? What has caused a gap, a crack, some brokenness inside of you? Have you surrendered that? Have you given that to God? Do you trust God? So I want everybody to bow your heads. If you have not gotten to the place in your life where you can say, I trust God with my brokenness, don't hesitate. Because aggrandizing is a process. Salvation is a process. It's a daily effort of working with God to mend the brokenness inside of you, to heal the pain, to give you the strength to handle the pain. It's a new perspective. It's a new way of living. If you have not answered God's invitation for salvation, and if you're ready to do so today, just raise your hand. I want to pray with you. Father, I thank you today for taking us through processes, for bending us, for making us better. I know that doesn't mean that I'm never going to face any trials. I know that means that life's not going to be perfect, that there's not going to be cracks, things happen because we live in a world of sin. But God, when we surrender who we are to you, and we give you that brokenness, no matter what goes on around us, we can live at shalom. God, you are shalom. You are peace. When we live with you side by side in our life, we live with peace. If we can keep our eyes focused on you, no matter what we're going through, no matter what comes and challenges us, then we can know that it is well. We can let go of the things, of the circumstances, of the relationships, of anything that is keeping us from being who you created us to be. God, we can let go. God, I thank you. I thank you that I can stand here and I can say that no matter what comes, it is well.